Good morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon. I am going to be with you for about 55 minutes. I have a wonderful show today, local historic show with a guy that I have really grown to admire. And I'll have him introduce himself because I think what he's done is he has taken the Susan B. Anthony Museum and breathe new life into it. It's exciting. They got a summer and a fall coming up. I'm just going to sit there and let Jim talk because it's amazing what they're doing, and they're bringing Susan B. Anthony, and something I'm a big believer in, Susan B. Anthony, but also American history to life. Now, I want to just start off with this. The views and opinions expressed on this program are mine and those of my guests. They in no way represent the Pittsfield School Department, School Committee, Peter Marchetti in the Mayor's Office, Peter White in the City Council, and or all the guys that are trying to bring the roads in Pittsfield back to passable status. Thank you for all your hard work. I certainly appreciate it. I know there's a lot of free information, as I like to say when I was a cop. I get a lot of free information from people on how I should do my job. But I'm not good at laying blacktop, so I'm going to let you guys handle it. The other piece, too, is history is important. And I want to thank, and I know this may create some friction, but I am a veteran of the United States Army in Vietnam. I want to thank all the troops that marched in that parade. You made us all proud. That's all I'm going to say. And thank you for your service and sacrifice, because anybody who's been in the service knows it's not just service, it's sacrifice, not only for you, but for your families. Without further ado, foie gras, soup du jour. James, introduce yourself and run with the program. We're going to take a break.
Hey, great to be here, Bill. I'm James Capuzzi with the Susan B. Anthony Birthplace Museum based in Adams, Mass. And we're just really excited to talk about a summer exhibit that we have coming up. We have a number of afternoon teas scheduled through the fall and other kind of community, family, and historic programming. Very excited to talk about that.
Well, and James, how long have you been with the Susan B. Anthony?
Yeah, so I came on in late August of 2023. So it's going to be 2 years and a couple months, just under 2 years here now.
And I say this, I don't want to embarrass him because he's a really good guy. But when I say breathe new life into it, when you hear all they're doing through this summer, through the teas, James, we'll share dates because so people can start putting them in their calendars.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
Stuff like that. Because what he's done with that museum is really, in my opinion, extraordinary. He brought it back to life. Susan B. Anthony is a very historical figure from here, from the local county, the local area. And I'll bet you if you asked 20 people, they may, oh, yeah, they did something with a coin or something. But or some kiddos may not even know. But James, give us a little bit of a history. You are so well versed. A little bit of a history on Susan B. Anthony, please.
Yeah, certainly. So I'll have to give also some credit to our staff. We have a wonderful docent, Martin Lohman, who's done a fantastic research and is able to provide kind of the narrative and some of the extra color that we give to Susan B. Anthony. We like to focus on her childhood, her Quaker upbringing here in Adams, Mass. And then we'll go and talk about all of the wonderful things and kind of progressive things that she was doing with regards to abolition, women's suffrage, opposition to wrestleism, and her work with the temperance movement. So she was just a prolific advocate and activist for her entire life. She never married. She's quoted as saying all of the men that she wanted were unavailable, and all the men that wanted her, she didn't want. Yeah. So she was really married to the cause. And that cause, as her life progressed, really turned out to be primarily women's suffrage or women's right to vote. Yeah.
So but the suffrage movement was, let's be honest, the the suffrage movement then was not well received, should we say? Is that trying to be kind? And
Yes, no, that's true. When Susan started out,
yeah.
when she started out in her kind of early days of women's suffrage, people would burn effigies, burn puppets of her, kind of marching on the street. They'd throw vegetables and things at her. There was a big shift post you were speaking about war and sacrifice and efforts before, and there's a big shift post World War I where people in England and in the United States were starting to realize. When there were men making these great sacrifices in combat, women and families also had to step up and step into roles they hadn't before. And they were noticing that, society wasn't crumbling when women were working and when they were more involved on kind of at home. And so there was a big shift in public perception. But for a long time, even from areas that we think of as being, supportive of women's rights, like Boston, there was a strong anti-suffrage contingent in the Boston area. Women that had, they had some power, they had some means, and they didn't really want to see change. So she was up against it, definitely, for the beginning of her career.
Yes, she was. And but the thing is, in the way, and I guess I don't want to compare and contrast, but I will. The suffrage movement had as much resistance then as a lot of the movements do now. But the ladies, and I use that term very meaningfully, the ladies never lost their composure, no matter what happened to them. From all that I, from our various interviews, but also afterwards, I did some research on my own. They always maintained, no matter, and in some places, people, I remember one, they threw tomatoes at them, I believe, to disperse them or whatever. But they maintained their composure.
But especially towards the end of the suffrage movement, this was after Susan B. Anthony's death, but in the final, I would say, 14 years of the movement, there were a number of women who would protest outside of the White House. They were called the Silent Sentinels. They would dress all in white. They would have signs protesting. A number of those women were imprisoned. They were thrown into Occoquan Workhouse in the D.C. area. They were beaten, starved. A woman was knocked unconscious. Another woman was hung from the ceiling by her hands for an entire night. They called it the Night of Terror. And all kinds of things to try to force these women to eat. They were on a hunger strike while imprisoned. But they, as you were saying, stuck to the cause. They were able to kind of flip public perception of this. Is it really helped seeing these kind of middle class, upper middle class, and wealthy women, really suffering, really taking, it was it like it was a real shift in how people were viewing the movement. These people really care about this. They're willing to,
Yeah, go to yeah.
endure for this fight. Yep, go to jail and all that.
Yeah, yeah. And I, the when you think about all of the people that resisted it, but also I applaud, and they're all gone, but those people who initially brought it together, it's like some of the protests today. I guess what bothers me a little bit about today's, a lot bothers me a lot actually, is the violence associated in the mean spiritedness. I mean, I'm sure there was mean spiritedness with them too, but they maintained their composure. I know I repeat myself, but when you get to be 78, you can repeat yourself too. What are some of the dynamic points that you since you found out, got involved with, what has impressed you the most about Susan B. Anthony?
Yeah, I think I'm most impressed by her, kind of her candor and kind of practical dedication to the things that she believed in. I think that she was not unwilling to compromise, but there were certain things that she wouldn't compromise on. And I think that that's an important value to hold on to. There's a her per we have a lot of her writings. We have day books of hers, we have diaries of hers, there's speeches of hers that she wrote in tandem with her colleague Elizabeth Cady Stanton. And just one anecdote, there's a speech that she gave to a New York State-based audience, and she was addressing kind of issues of abolition, issues of race, and she was challenging that audience that, you know, in her experience, there is an equal amount of kind of racist energy in the northern states as there was in the southern states. And this was not met with much applause. They were not happy to hear that. There is
Right.
a sense that Susan will be coming to congratulate them on the good work they were doing. And so she was always willing to challenge and to push people closer to the kind of the goals that she wanted to see. Even people in her own circles. I mean, Rochester, New York, that was her home base. And she was always making sure that there she continuously challenging, kind of in a way that, you know, made her, by the end of her life, had made her many friends, but for many years did made her quite a few enemies as well. That kind of
Yeah.
direct approach.
Yeah, and I and yes, but she was always a woman, always a lady. Is that fair to say? I mean, she could deliver those kind of
Yep.
tough remarks, but she did it not in a I don't want to say threatening way, but in a way that people could, while they may not love it, they could absorb it.
Right, and I think that's the kind of feminine strength that she had. She was concerned with how she would be perceived, how she would kind of everything that she did, whether it's all the way down to her dress. There was a time that she was wearing the bloomer, which are the short skirts and pants underneath those. That was controversial for the time, and so she went back to wearing dresses. She wore a black, her famous black dress was in honor of her mother, who had to restrict her own fashion choices growing up. And so she was very concerned with maintaining, as you're saying, this kind of respectable, intelligent, and you know, feminine appearance.
Yeah.
While she was delivering these messages. In fact, some of her, and we have a number of these, we have a collection of postcards, and we have a book that we published called Vintage Tweets. That's a number of pro-suffrage, anti-suffrage, and other postcards from the area. They read like the title, they read like memes of today. But
Wow.
a number of the postcards that are anti Susan B. Anthony, their goal kind of in depiction of her is to make her appear like a man, make her appear kind of unattractive and unfeminine as a way to kind of show this movement, being a suffragist,
Right.
voting is something that turns you from a woman to a man. And Susan was she was very much dedicated to ensuring that she remained a woman
Yeah.
while fighting for suffrage. That was important.
Well, I think you articulated it much better than I, because that's what I've been trying to say, is she never lost her
Yes,
femininity. Yeah,
exactly.
because she was always a woman. She didn't want it, and she stood up for, they say, they call them women's rights now, and I agree. But she back then, think about it. Back then, we're talking back in the early 1900s. I mean, think, while the world has changed dramatically, I try to put myself back when she was trying to change her little portion of the world, voting. And she, I don't think she gets enough play, enough publicity. You've blown that way up from what it was, but because with all the suffrage movements and movements today and movements through the years, she was like one of the forerunners in this country.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So she got her start in a temperance society in New York, and it was after one of these meetings that she met Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who was already involved in temperance and women's suffrage. Their friendship really sparked Susan's involvement in the movement, and the two of them were kind of a almost like a yin and yang, kind of two sides of the same coin. Elizabeth had seven children and couldn't really get out of the house. In fact, Susan writes in her diary that whenever she would go to Elizabeth's house to help write speeches, Elizabeth would have her caring for the children, making puddings, a lot of pudding information in Susan's diaries, but she pretty much had to help Elizabeth with her children in order for them to have the time to write these speeches. And then Susan would take the great writing of Elizabeth, and she would be the really was the face of the movement for almost her entire life. It was only in the years late 1800s that there was a kind of second wave or a new generation of suffragists that were college educated and could take that mantle from Susan. But for a very long time, like you're saying, she was the first and really the only in terms of public perception of suffrage, women
And if
suffrage.
I remember, and like you know what you're dealing with here with memory, but if I remember, Stanton used to have, she would be writing with her kids all over the bed.
Correct.
If you read that story, I mean, or because she had the kids and she had to, take care of them, but also do her writing so that she'd have them all on the bed with her.
No, she was, I mean, it's a really great image just to have kind of the two sides of her life, her public and private life, really combining. And she did a great job of really managing both. I can't imagine it was easy. It's so many children. So,
No, but one or two is a challenge. Six is
certainly.
what if you had to single out one point, and I don't want to catch you flat-footed, but one point of why people should know more about Susan B. Anthony to share not only with themselves but with their children or grandchildren. What would that be?
I mean, I think the main point or the point that we try to emphasize the most from our museum is that she was born in Adams and she's from Berkshire County, and that she's living in neighborhoods and communities that are not dissimilar from where this people are still living now,
Right.
still working. There's a farm behind the museum that is on elements of her family's, the Anthony family's farmland. There are people doing the same thing, living in the same place, looking up at the same Mount Greylock that Susan did, and that there's an opportunity to kind of take on Susan's, not, it might not be Susan's exact cause. Women can vote now, which is great, but there are other causes and there are other interest points that people may have as they're growing up, and to recognize that this is something that you can do. You can be from Adams, you can be from Berkshire County, you can be from these rural communities and still have a major impact in society at large. I don't think Susan necessarily thought earlier in her career that she would be doing this kind of work. I mean, she spent years as a school teacher. I'm sure there are school teachers now in the county that have similar ideas and have similar kind of missions. And I think that with that dedication, and Susan referred to it as consecration to the cause. So somewhat akin to a marriage or similar to like a really almost like a spiritual dedication that she had to women's suffrage. And that certainly helped. But that's what we try to emphasize with when we do school visits, we do school outreach, we visit different elementary and middle schools in Berkshire County and throughout Massachusetts, and just trying to ignite that in students because they do care. They don't have apathy. They care a lot about many different things in their towns, in their state, in the country, in the world, and they think with a much, they have a much bigger picture for everything. I think as we age, we start to realize how difficult a lot of this is, how much effort it takes, and we start to segment things off where this is something that I can't achieve. This is something that even we can't achieve. But children don't think like that. And so letting them think like that, encouraging them to, and using Susan B. Anthony as a model for someone that thought how they think and then went and did it for her entire life, I think can be really impactful.
I also think she did it. She didn't do it for self-aggrandizement. She did it for the good of the women, but for the good of the country. And I think sometimes that gets lost in some translations. Her and Stanton seem to, I go back. I know it's, you have Susan B. Anthony who's out there. You have Elizabeth Stanton with six kids, and probably
Seven.
a very what's the word I'm looking for? A very good husband to let her get involved in all this stuff, because it wasn't well received. I mean, I want to stress that to the voters.
That's right.
Like we're seeing a lot of things in today's world that aren't well received. So we'll light cars on fire and burn people and burn it. But it was the professional, and that's the only word I can think of Susan B. Anthony and Stanton. They never lost sight of the goal. They didn't get turned one way or
Right,
the other.
right.
They Is that fair to say? You're the expert. I'm just babbling.
No, I think that's a really great point. I think one of the elements of, if you look at kind of the trajectory for both of them, but for Susan especially, it was how, as they started this effort, they were hopeful that they would be able to pass women's suffrage in their own lifetimes. And I
Right,
think there was a
right.
push after the 14th and 15th Amendments that they hoped that the 16th would be for women's suffrage. That was not the case. And I think that it took some grappling for Susan and for Elizabeth over the next kind of 15 to 20 years of coming to terms with the fact that you're fighting for something, you're building something that
Right.
you won't actually see.
Right.
And so you see Susan in 1906, a month before she died, giving a speech at her birthday. There was a birthday celebration for her, and that's where we get the famous quote, "Failure is impossible." She says, "With women such as these consecrated to the cause, failure is impossible," which is a great quote. But it
Yes.
really highlights, I think, what, yeah, it highlights what's difficult. It's difficult to, I don't know if there's necessarily been a decline in this in population, but the idea of, like you had mentioned up top with military sacrifice, military service,
Yes.
the idea of giving something, giving all of yourself for something that you won't actually benefit from, right? So Susan dedicated her entire life to this, and she never, well, she did vote illegally, but she never was able to vote legally, never really able to see the fruits really of
Right.
all of her labor. And it's the same in like you're mentioning, it's the same with military service and military sacrifice. It's a similar kind of tie-in of this. You are caring more about your country, more about your family, more about other people than you do for yourself. So there's a selflessness there that really, like as you had spoken up top, should be commended.
Yeah, and I'm glad you're bringing that out, because today, and people do so much today about it's about me. And I think really, when you think back on a lot of our heroes in this nation, it was about creating a nation, creating voting rights for women, when it was not popular. I mean, it wasn't there's a lot of people who pick up a cause that's popular. But these ladies, and
Right.
I keep using the word ladies, because that when I did our re for our first interview, I did a lot of research, and the one thing that continually jumped out at me was that she was always a lady. You don't read anywhere where she used this or vulgarity, or she could look you in the eye and tell you what she thought. But that's a lot different than belittling you and cursing at you. And as she got
Right.
older, I'm sorry, were you going to say something? I didn't mean to jump on you. Were you going
No,
to?
I was going to say that just no, sorry. So that element of kind of maintaining like the femininity of it, I think is important, and that's something that we talk about, or kind of is the focus of our summer exhibit, just to mention it.
Yes.
We're having a special exhibit at the museum this summer. It's running from June all the way through Halloween, which is the end of our kind of busy season. It's called Votes for
Wow.
Women: How Tea Sparked a Suffrage Revolution, and it's actually based on that next wave of suffragists. So after Susan B. Anthony had passed away, another wave of women were taking over the movement, and one of these women was Alva Belmont, who is
Yes.
based in Newport, Rhode Island. She was part of the kind of New York City social elite. She built the fantastic Marble House, which is one of the Newport mansions, and she used her platform and used these traditionally female activities, these female events such as a tea, an afternoon tea, these kind of garden parties, as ways to promote women's suffrage. So she had a famous suffrage rally in 1909, and then she had another event called the Conference of Great Women in 1914, and she had a tea set made specifically for these events where she wrote. Had written on the porcelain teacups and everything, votes for women. That was the major fundraiser for the movement. We are grateful to Fenford Hall, Gilded Age and Mansions and Museum over in Lenox, Mass. They had a set of her original suffrage teacups. So we have a teapot, we have teacups, we have plates, even a tea towel, which
That's
is
phenomenal.
fantastic. And we're displaying those. The background of my Zoom is a photo of an element of our display of the Chinese tea room that she had in her backyard. But that's kind of what we're focusing on in this exhibit is how, like you were saying, women were able to advocate for women's suffrage from a position of kind of traditional femininity. So the idea of revolution, but from a place of kind of expectation. So people wouldn't necessarily be thinking anything is amiss at one of these tea gatherings, but
Right.
Alva and her friends were able to really start to shape public opinion, shape elite opinion, and improve kind of the perception of women's suffrage, taking it on as something that is not just something that Susan and Elizabeth and that first wave were fighting for with much
Yeah.
opposition, but transitioning it to something that would become. Would gain enough groundswell to then become the 19th Amendment.
And again, it was done for the greater good. It wasn't done for their
That's right.
personal good. Because like you said, and I'm repeating it for the, they wouldn't live to see this. But
That's
yet,
right.
it's like people plant a tree in memory of someone, knowing full well they will not see that tree grow to its fullest. But anybody who looks on after that, and I just when you think back on Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Stanton, all these giant, they're female giants, and Mamie Eisenhower, the one Franklin Roosevelt's wife, Eleanor Roosevelt. I mean, again. I say, and again, I apologize. I do repeat myself.
Eleanor, yeah.
We got to tell Ellen the story of these women. I went through school. I never once read a thing about Susan B. Anthony in the old history books. And
Right.
operative word there, James, old history books. They were in part.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, we're going to take a quick break. I'm here. We're talking about. I want you back. Come back after the break because we're going to give you all the dates and all the times. And I really want you to bring your kiddos and to any of these things because that's how they learn. I often tell people, and they get mad at me, but my mother would march us hand in glove. Down to all the parades, 4th of July, Memorial Day, Veterans Day. And then what was sacrosanct, I can remember walking in the driving rain to vote. Think of what Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Stanton and so many others gave from their own lives so that women could vote. We'll be right back. This is WTBR 89.7 FM on your radio dial. We and on PCTV channel 1301 if you have Spectrum. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM. You're tuned to Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield and 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts.
UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
Hey, it's Sean from WTBR-FM. Whether you just found this station for the first time or you've been listening for years, you might not know everything about WTBR-FM. Want to find out more? It's easy. Just go to WTBRFM.com. You can find full programming schedules, listen to the station anywhere in the world, subscribe to our podcasts, and even learn to create a program of your own. And of course, donate to the station. That's WTBRFM.com. Check it out today.
The Pittsfield Health Department is hosting monthly wellness clinics available to the community at the Christian Center, Senior Center, Epworth Arms, Capitol Square, and South Congregational Church. Vital sign checks, medication reviews, and health assessments are offered by the public health nurse. Our social worker will be there with information of available resources as well. For more information about these clinics, please contact us at 413-499-9411.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
Hi, my name is Al Perlman, and I love jazz. Mostly jazz from the bebop and beyond period of the 40s, 50s, and 60s. I also love sharing my passion for jazz from my extensive jazz vinyl collection with listeners here in Berkshire County. So please join me on Sundays at 8 p.m. for my show Jazz Collector Live on WTBR-FM Pittsfield Community Radio.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available. Online at sundrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back. WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, we are back. I'm here today with James. James is the curator. Is that correct?
Director.
Oh, director.
Is more
okay.
Accurate, yeah.
Of the Susan B. Anthony Museum. And we've had a wonderful chat in the first half hour about Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Stanton, real heroes, real stand-up ladies. I'll say it one more time for my saintly Irish mother, who always considered herself a lady. Ladies. Who took on the cause, really, to have women... the right for women to vote. And it was a big deal. And they paid a personal price, but they never, all of my research for the first interview I did with James, they never lost their professionalism and their demeanor, I guess, is the best. If you ever seen anywhere where they have, James, you know, lost it?
Well, I will say there was I'm trying to remember the exact story, but there was a quote of Susan B. Anthony's where she was asked if she would ever she would ever vote for Horace Greeley in an election, and she said. And she was quoted in the newspaper that she would rather cut off her arm, and so that was certainly hyperbolic. I don't think Susan actually would have cut off her arm, but that definitely was a step away from her typical control over language and posture with regards to the suffrage movement. I will say also that the British suffrage movement, the suffragists in England faced even stronger kind of anti or opposition to their suffrage. That's where we get the suffragette term from, which is actually a derogatory term for women suffragists. And the British suffrage organization and movement did take on a more violent tone. There were window smashings with toffee hammers and things of that nature. There was a woman who stepped in front of a train or a bus at one event in order to draw attention to the movement. And so there were elements of the suffrage movement abroad that were more radical, potentially in response to greater opposition. And I think the later in the United States, as these younger women, talking Alice Paul, Lucy Stone, Carrie Chapman Catt, they took what was good from the British suffrage movement, but they did leave the violence in England. So in the U.S. Yeah. suffrage movement, it never got to that point. They focused more on a nonviolent protest, like the silent sentinels outside right. of the White House, and they used you know tea parties, tea events for fundraising. Susan would speak at a lot of these events, and they also used the press and the media as a way to highlight the sufferings they had endured. There's actually a great story in order to show to the public what a forced feeding looks like. So a number of these women were put into the Occoquan prison. They refused to eat as a hunger strike, which is a kind of growing method of nonviolent protest. And they were force fed, and force feeding is a pretty violent procedure. Yeah. At least it was in that era. It consisted of a mixture of raw eggs and milk being poured down someone's throat via a tube. And so a journalist in New York City reenacted that experience in the Times Square, so in the center of New York City. And so that really helped kind of activate public awareness of these sufferings. I mean, the idea, you know, you think of, it's hard to grasp what actually is happening unless you see it. And so I think that was had a really big impact on showing, you know, these are women who are standing, you know, on the corner of the street with signs. Their daughters are with them in many cases. There are women that protested outside the Massachusetts State House with their daughters, and they were all thrown into prison. And so showing, you know, these are the response from the U.S. government was overmuch to the protests that were happening. And I think people started to respond to that. There was a lot of public pressure against Wilson to stop, at least stop force feeding eventually release the women from prison.
Yeah. So. And I mean, we have to think back when we do these things, when we assign, you know, blame or success or whatever. One of this quote, and you have it on your handout, which I think is wonderful. And it's so, in my opinion, so absolutely fitting for today's struggles. And let me read it to you. I don't believe in individual work in any case, period. All work for a cause must be collective. Close quotes. Think about that. It and I think there's something similar today in the Eagle, in the Berkshire Eagle. But what I just really think, we got to get to these events. You and I could, I mean, you're the expert. I just babble on for. But I
really appreciate our conversations. I think that you're bringing out elements of the movement that are important to highlight. I think it's important
I dug out my old notes last night. I dug out my old notes from the first.
I appreciate it.
And I've highlighted some of them. And I just really I've gone a little goofy. Well, you'll have hundreds of people text you that I am goofy. But I've gone a little goofy on appreciating American history. How do we get to where we are? It just didn't happen. A lot of people, Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Stanton, all these people could have done 1,000 other things. They didn't. And they put themselves out on Front Street for criticism. And I mean, going back to the Founding Fathers, and I know people don't want to hear about the Founding Fathers. It's not relevant anymore. Really? Think about it. Anyhow, you got a bunch of stuff coming up, and I don't want to take away from it. How women, how the tea, I love this, how the tea sparked the suffrage revolution. And it's close to my home, James, because my mother was Irish, and she had, at 3 o'clock every afternoon, she had a cup of tea.
Oh, yeah.
You could set your watch by it.
Yep. Yep.
So, it's yours now, bro. Run with it.
So that exhibit, we're really excited to have that. We have a tea set from the original 1909 Votes for Women tea and 1914 Conference of Great Women, donated from Ventford Hall, Gilded Age Mansion and Museum. And it has the teapot, it has the teacups with the beautiful kind of blue writing on these white porcelain cups that Alva commissioned. She made them and had them made in Portugal, and they're used as kind of a practical and decorative tool for these teas. And so the exhibit, there's a lot of beauty involved with that, and it's trying to highlight kind of the ways that Alva, as kind of a more influential member of the later part of the suffrage movement, used her social power and fortune, and really that beauty and that kind of feminine quality that she had and that these events had, to promote different causes. At her Conference of Great Women brought labor speakers, it brought political speakers, it brought a number of different women speakers, a reverend, that were kind of sharing, like you're saying, the quote that you mentioned before, the idea of kind of a collective cause or working together collectively. That was something that was very important to Alva. But she did it from a place of beauty and grace. And I think that was very important for the success of the movement generally. The suffrage movement from its early days was centered around these tea events. Elizabeth Cady Stanton was part of one in 1848, which was a number of women having tea and discussing women's suffrage. There are other similar teas in the Boston area and kind of throughout really the Northeast, as places where women would gather to discuss these issues. And there were speakers they would invite to the teas. A lot of Susan B. Anthony's travels and her speeches that she would give for most of her career were at these kind of tea events. And so we're really just highlighting the importance of these kind of, these what might be viewed as a kind of social activity, but they had real revolutionary potential within these women's circles. So we're actually, and then I'll stop, but we're actually holding teas of our own kind of in that same vein. So we have the exhibit will be running again. We're at the museum. We're up on 67 East Road in Adams, Mass. Up on 8A, kind of parallel to Route 8. Once you get into Adams, there's red signs that help you point you up the hill. But we also have teas of our own that are in that style of the Conference of Great Women. And so we've invited different women poets, artists, writers, performers to come to the museum and present at our own outdoor teas. And so to this point, we've had two. We've had our Susan B. Anthony reenactor performing at those events. And we're excited to welcome on June 28th, we're welcoming Nancy Manning and Karen Chozek, who are two Connecticut-based poets. They've written works about being women, being mothers, but they've also written poems about Susan B. Anthony and about the house itself after an experience they had visiting, which is we're very excited to welcome them back. Later in July, on July 26th, we're excited to welcome Williamstown-based artist Laura Christensen. She is a fantastic artist, and she right now has an exhibit up at the Hancock Shaker Village. And so we're excited to have her come to our tea, talk a little bit about that exhibit. And her art centers around taking kind of Victorian imagery and repurposing it, reshaping it into something new. And so if you do have time to visit her exhibit at the Hancock Shaker Village, would highly recommend that. She'll be speaking also at our tea on July 26th. And then the final one that I'll mention, and then I will stop talking, is we're happy to welcome Sarah Hoban. Sarah Hoban is the director over at Mosaic, which is and also connected with Gallery 51 at MCLA in North Adams. And she has a background in creative writing, and she'll be leading a writing workshop in the style of Susan's speeches on August 23rd. All the teas are at 3 o'clock outside at the museum. We're really excited for Sarah, in particular, just because she's tying in her own expertise, and she's using some of Susan's most impactful or most famous speeches as kind of a basis for that writing workshop. So that'll be a really kind of insightful and enjoyable afternoon.
And the other part of it, too, is I want to just give you a couple of other dates that I have in front of me.
Sure.
June the 20th, Northampton Council on Aging, 1 o'clock.
That's right. Yep.
Wilbraham, Saturday, July the 12th, 1 p.m., Wilbraham Council on Aging. And Saturday, August 9th, 10 a.m., Hillcrest Academy Multicultural Day.
Yep.
And there's probably more, but what's the quote? And you know, by now, you know, not left, a lot going on up there. What's the quote? It's impossible. What's that impossible one?
Yeah. So Susan read it. This quote is she spoke at her 86th birthday party, basically. And she said, speaking about the younger generation of women, she said, with women such as these consecrated to the cause, failure is impossible.
Is impossible.
Yeah.
But a lot of people now have captured that quote and used it, not always citing it. In many, 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 through my career, my life, I have heard that failure is impossible.
Yeah.
I never, until I met James and we had our first little set to, and I want to thank James for coming back because he put up with me once before. And, you know, usually people.
Oh, I was happy to be here.
And people running down the street screaming after they meet me. But, you know, the wealth of Berkshire County historically, I mean, they just did a thing with Lafayette at the corner of at Park Square. I mean, the rock beyond that, the big rock with the plaque on it says, this is where they planned some pub. Where else would you do it? They planned a raid on Ticonderoga. I do applaud you, all your people who contribute, your staff, your researchers, your board, for the wonderful things you're doing to bring this lady, who some people, like, I bet you if you called up 10 people across the country and said, who's Susan B. Anthony? They say, well, she lived down the street, you know. But it's just something, I'm a history buff anyhow. I love what you guys are doing. I love what James, and I've said this at the beginning of the show, I'll say it again. James breathed new life with his team back into the Susan B. Anthony Museum. We're going to give you the address again. We are going to tell you the hours. And may I say this, and please bring your grammar school, middle school, and high school children through, because this museum has captured history in the making, and everybody there can, I mean, they're a wealth of knowledge. So James, if you would pick it up, address, times.
Yeah, certainly. So we're open Thursdays through Monday. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And the new exhibit will be open this weekend, starting June 20th through October. So there's plenty of time to stop by and see us. But yeah, just like Bill was saying, it is a family-friendly institution. We have a number of kind of the children's toys that Susan and girls like Susan would have played with as children in the 1800s for your kids to play with while you're touring the house. There's a lot of great knowledge there. And I will say that for the younger audience, getting to go to the place, experience the history, see it, feel it, and some things they're allowed to touch and kind of interact with, that can be really impactful. The dates that you mentioned before, Bill, in the Council of Aging in Northampton and in Cumberland and other locations this summer, that Hillcrest Multicultural Day, we're excited about that. Those all feature our Susan B. Anthony reenactor, Muriel Diaz. She's a historical performer, and she does a fantastic job of bringing Susan to life. We're gracious enough to be invited out to Hadley Middle School, where we performed for actually elementary Mosier School. We performed for 145 third graders, and they all, we would not see the amount of engagement, the amount of joy, the amount of interest that these children had in learning more about Susan B. Anthony was just really inspiring. And so it is a It's a great thing to do as a family. We have library passes at most of the libraries in Berkshire County. I know they're at in the Williamstown Library, in the Pittsfield Library, in the Adams Library, that allow you to get in for free, two adults and two children. We encourage you to use those. We're part of the Mass Cultural Council's Card to Culture program, which allows reduced or free admission to people on with an EBT card, a WIC card, Sunbuck card. And we're just really, really trying to do our best to make sure that everyone who wants to come visit us can come visit us and experience this history.
And again, when you go into that museum, it truly is a time warp. It truly, I mean... the clothing, the china, I mean, today, if this is my fancy china right here, mug, but I think back on my own youth with my mother. Every so often, a priest would come, and out would come the best Irish linen. I can't think of the name of the cutlery and the plates, but it was a different era. And I strongly encourage you to really take part in this. Become, how do I want to say it? Become involved with it and stay up to date with it. I mean, I've been remiss for not getting Jim on sooner. But I believe in what he's doing, and I believe in all their efforts there. And become part, share history with your children. What I find, and I don't want to make this a political thing, but what I find in today's world is we forgot our history. A lot of us have forgot our history. I'm old enough, I'm 78 years old. I got a lot of history behind me. You know, I mean, you're not going to believe this. Our phones were attached to the wall. So if you wanted to go far, you could go about 6 feet with the big cord. James, anything else before we close? It's the time has flown by.
It's always great to spend time talking with you. I really, really do enjoy and appreciate our conversations. I guess just the last thing, you're talking about people getting involved, getting more interested in history in the museum. We have memberships, museum memberships for individuals and families. They allow you free access to the museum anytime that we're open, and then also free access to all of these teas. So we'll have a monthly tea through October. There's typically a $15 admission for the tea that would then be free if you're a museum member. So there's a definite benefit there. On the topic of kind of reconnecting with history, there is just something special about coming to a house. We've restored the house to what it would have looked like when Susan was living here. You're walking back 200 years in time. It's not something that you can get from even the best documentary or the best History Channel show. It's something that really should be experienced and has an impact for young and old.
It's very much like Shaker Village. It's very much like the William Chester French.
Chesterwood, Arrowhead. There's a lot of
You have to you become part of it.
That's right.
That's all I can say. I don't want you to take this as a threat, but I'll be up to see you.
Wonderful.
Prepare your staff. Just say if you see an old fat bald guy with a cane, call security. But thank you for what you've done and all that you're doing, and again. When are the monthly teas? Do you have the dates?
Yes. So the monthly teas that will be, they're typically the last or the second to last Saturday of the month. But it's June 28th, July 26th, August 23rd, September 27th, and October 25th. And they're all at 3:00. They'll be outside in our garden, weather permitting. And we have the tea sandwiches. We'll have scones, macarons, all the whole kind of, accoutrement that go along with a really nice tea. And we'll have different speakers, like we were saying, and performers through the fall.
James, I promise you I'll be to one of them. If you would do me a favor and just email me those dates, I'll put them up on my Facebook.
Absolutely. Yeah. Be happy to do that.
All right. And, folks, I say this and I mean it from my heart. God bless you all. I know I upset some of you, but the other portion is this. You know, we're all in this together. So let's try to lift somebody today. Lift their spirits. Make them smile. Help them, not hurt them. It's much easier to be kind than it is to be nasty. Stay tuned. I want to thank James, and I want to thank all of you for your loyal listening and viewing. And we're all in this together. Let's help each other. Okay? James, the best, bro. Like I said, don't take it as a threat. I'll be coming up to see you.
No, I'll be happy to see you in person. Thanks, Bill.
Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful day. Bye.